It is the KEXC Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton along with John Latimer. We take a look in depth at some natural resource-based issues important to our region. We've covered lots of topics, including decline of birds, forests, carbon, and climate change, pollinators, and forest history. We are now starting a series of follow-up segments based on these topics. We are welcoming to the conversation, along with our producer, Mark Jacobs, Kelly Applegate, Commissioner of Natural Resources for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and we're going to learn about purple martins. Kelly, Mark, thanks for being here today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk a little bit. What is your role as the Commissioner of Natural Resources?
Sure. Well, my role as commissioner here, I'm in an appointed position, and I am a protector. I'm a protector for the band. My role is to look out for our culture, our wildlife, our natural environment, and be a voice for those beings that don't have a voice, and to protect and make sure that they're here for us now, all of us to enjoy, and for our future generations to enjoy.
Let's talk a little bit about a big focus that you have there, and that is on purple martins. Why? What's behind that?
Yeah, so purple martins are North America's largest species of swallows, and they're completely dependent upon mankind for their housing and their nesting. So if we were to remove the big martin houses that people put up in their backyards and their front yards, this species wouldn't know how to go back to a natural nesting regime like they once did. They once nested in as secondary cavity nesters in abandoned woodpecker holes, mostly from, we believe, red-headed woodpeckers would come into an area of dead trees and they would nest, and then the purple martins would use those excavated cavities after those species would be done. Purple martins have been in a pretty serious decline since the 1960s. Way back in the 40s and 50s and even through the early 60s, it was so popular to have a purple martin house. Families would build them, and it was a great tradition that sadly society has kind of fallen away from. And our work here at the Mille Lacs Band is to ensure that the species stay and can proliferate and hold on as a species in our area.
Is the problem lack of, let's call it housing, lack of appropriate habitat when they arrive here, or are there other problems in their cycle? Are there problems that occur maybe where they spend the winters?
Yeah, purple martins, because they're dependent upon us for their housing, they need a very particular type of purple martin house. So the days of, you know, building a purple martin house that used to say 6-inch by 6-inch cube with a 2-inch hole or a 2.5-inch hole, those days are gone because invasive species such as European starlings and English house sparrows, which are introduced species to the United States, they outcompete the martins in the martin housing. And that can be very discouraging for people that are getting into the hobby. When they put up a purple martin house and it fills with those other species, and the purple martins aren't likely to take residence if that happens. However, we do have special entrances now for the martin houses. They're a starling resistant entrance. So it has a certain dimension that allows the purple martin to get in, but it doesn't allow the starling to get in. So it tips the scales in favor of the purple martins to nest. Other factors that can affect martins are weather. Purple martins are not very good at predicting the weather when they arrive back, and they're actually coming back right around now. April 15th, mid-April, is their estimated arrival time here in our area in central and north Minnesota. So the first of the birds are coming back. We have had reports of earlier birds about a week ago. And they're slow. They'll slowly be coming in from their migrating through from their wintering grounds down in South America.
Do you have plans available so that someone who would like to build a martin house can get these dimensions so that they can build that starling-resistant opening?
Sure. And there's several manufacturers that make these plates. A good resource would go to purplemartin.org, and on there are a plethora of resources for people to learn more about where to site their martin house. It needs to be in an open area. In Minnesota, because we have so much water, you can literally put the house anywhere within within the state, as long as it's in an open area, and be relatively successful in attracting them.
Is there anything?
Are there
go ahead, Mark.
Are there an ideal number of units? I know they're kind of colonial, so it's, you know, they have multiple units in these houses.
Yeah, and if someone were to start off, there's a model that we like. It's called a T14, and it's kind of in four columns, and two of the stacks have four holes and two of the stacks have three holes. And it's a very manageable house, so it would go up and down on a pole with a winch, and it has a cable and a kind of a pulley at the top. And the front of the housing opens by opening some clasp, and then inside there are actually nest trays that you can pull out. And purple martins are very comfortable with human interaction. So, and most of us seasoned landlords will check the housing every week or multiple times per week and lower the house, count the eggs, count the babies, collect data on when the young hatch. And there's a fair amount of management to keep the colony healthy and maximize your fledging rates so you can get those young ones out the door.
And your research has indicated that this sort of interruption doesn't upset the martins too much.
No, in fact, they're pretty dependent upon it. If you just leave your purple martin house go, there's other factors that can affect them. Sometimes an egg can roll out of the nest towards the door. And if you're checking, you can roll that back egg back into the nest. It's kind of a old misinformation that if you touch the bird's nest, they'll abandon. With these species, it's kind of critical to be very interactive with them. Hmm. I've handled them from when they're hatchling age till they're, almost ready to fledge, and I've banded them, done different things handling them. So when they get a little older in the nest, you need to be careful because they could jump out and fly prematurely. But yeah, there are species that kind of require that monitoring and watching. And again, that purplemartin.org is a great website for people to learn about how to care and manage for the birds.
Aside from
I was reading that there's kind of a long history with the Native American tribes and purple martins having, you know, gourds in their communities and stuff like that. Is that true?
Right. So purple martins, the species made some switches to adapt over to this human dependent way that they are. And we think that from what we know, is back hundreds of years ago, Native Americans would use gourds to store seeds, dried goods, materials and things and whatnot. And to get those gourds dry and ready for storage, they would hang them out kind of on some racks in the sunlight. And we think that, you know, maybe some squirrels chewed some holes in them, or there were some holes to let moisture out of them. And purple martins noticed them and started nesting in them. And the indigenous peoples noticed that these birds are liking these gourd systems, started to put up gourd racks for them to nest in. And then it evolved to kind of this relationship with purple martins, where the purple martins would serve as kind of a primitive alarm clock. They would sing in the morning and wake the tribe up, or the indigenous peoples. And they would also serve as watchdogs for any type of predator that was coming in that might steal drying meats or fruits or things of that nature. So they would alarm call if anything was approaching. And they were kind of also a form of entertainment for those of us that have had the joy of having a colony in the backyard or have been in the view of an active purple martin colony. It's quite something to watch, because they have one of the most beautiful bird songs there are. It sounds like a chorus of these liquidy, gurgly chirps and really pleasant sounds. And they're active. They're kind of flying around each other and competing for compartments and bumping each other off the housing and doing aerial acrobats and diving at the house. And it's just a really unique and special species for us here in Minnesota. We're lucky to have them.
We are talking with Kelly Applegate today. He's Commissioner of Natural Resources for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. So I suppose you gave a great description of what the call is. Can you do a call yourself?
I can't.
Okay.
But it's very complex. They do like a, it almost sounds like a frog croaking at times, like a frog chirping, mixed with like a deep, deep kind of chortle, kind of a warbling effect. My advice would be for listeners to go out and in a couple of weeks here, when the martins return in numbers, to find a purple martin colony and just sit and watch it and learn more, and you know, maybe put up a purple martin house themselves.
What's the phenology of the martin? Are there individuals that sort of arrive early and scout, and then the flock comes in, or do they all just kind of pour north, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's kind of an old wives' tale that, you know, there's one bird that would come and, you know, and then it would fly back south and it would bring the rest of the colony. That's kind of noble to think that the species does that, but the truth is, from our research, we found that those are simply the oldest birds that know the migration route, that have taken it several times, and they want to get back and get the prime choice of nesting within the house itself, within the purple martin house. And usually the older birds will pick the higher compartments and defend them and claim them right away before the younger birds come.
Do you have hope, Kelly, for the future?
Yes, I do. We've seen an increase in people getting interested in purple martins. And we had an effort here in Minnesota called the Minnesota Purple Martin Working Group. And we do have a Facebook page that listeners could also find. It's MN Purple Martin Working Group. We encourage people to join on there. There's a community here in Minnesota that are working to save the species through that effort. And Yeah, there's a lot of good information. There's a lot of learning if people want to actually help the species, and there's a lot of learning involved in how to sight the purple martin house, what color to paint it, putting in even pre-nesting material. We use pine needles, white pine needles, to kind of line their nest, so it gives them a head start when they come back. And sometimes if the weather is bad in the spring and we get a snow, people will even flick crickets into the air to feed them, because they're aerial insectivores. So they're not like other birds that would like go to the ground and pick worms or anything like that. These birds need flying insects. So sometimes I can look pretty crazy out there with a Dairy Queen spoon and some crickets, and I'm flicking them into the air. But that can save the birds from starvation in early spring.
I love it, Kelly. That's a perfect image.
a cool place to watch in my neck of the woods is actually in the parking lot of the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge, right on Highway 65.
Oh, yeah.
There's a big purple martin house, and I've sat there and been mesmerized by them a number of times.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's part of our efforts to restore the species there. We worked with Walt Ford, the refuge manager there, and coordinated that purple martin house, and it's been successful for over a decade.
Mm. Wonderful. Well, Kelly, thanks for joining us this morning, and thanks for all the work you're doing to promote the purple martin. It is one of my favorite birds, and I'm not surprised that you couldn't. I would have been blown away if you'd been able to imitate that, wow, that wonderful song of theirs. They are absolutely, indescribable. It's really, you need to, if you're listening this morning, go to Merlin or go to an app on the phone and find the call and listen to it. It is magical. Thanks for coming and telling us about the purple martins.
Oh, thank you so much. And good luck to everyone who's looking to get into purple martins.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
This segment produced by Mark Jacobs. It'll be available later at our website at kaxe.org. Coming up next, DJ the DJ is going to be our host for On the River.